the Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the podcast tonight. And in this podcast and in a series of interviews, I've got some very successful property investors. And what I wanted to do was interview these people to find out a little bit more about them, about what makes them tick, about what their motivations are, what their days look like, how they overcame obstacles and that sort of thing. Because I think that's really important to understand how someone gets from working in a job to not working in a job and being the master of his own destiny. So I'd like to introduce tonight Barry Davis. Welcome, Barry. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Dan. Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. Now, I've known Barry for, what, Barry? It's about 7 years, must be.
Yeah, it must be now, yeah.
About 7 years. And we actually went down to Italy to go do Unleash the Power Within with Tony Robbins. And that was just a wonderful experience. How did you find that, Barry?
Yeah, I thought it was incredible. So, yeah, we were just getting involved in property. That was really early days for us. So we were going through some really, really tough times. So getting the mindset right is just so important. So really good and in a really pivotal time in our property journey.
I've got it. And so, like you mentioned mindset, what is it about mindset that's so important? Because I think this is a big area. People say, oh, well, my mindset's fine. What was it about the mindset that you needed to plug?
Well, property can be very, very difficult, especially we started investing in property and we literally had no money. So by the time we went to Tony Robbins, we were down to our last £2,000. We didn't have a job. We were full time in property. We weren't making any money from property at this time. And we just really, really needed to stay strong and to be able to kind of get through that very, very tough time and come out the other side. It's so important to always have a great mindset. So we're always watching motivational talks on YouTube, going to see Tony Robbins, doing whatever we could to make sure our mindset was right. Because without that, we definitely would have given up.
So it's interesting because with Tony Robbins, what happens, you go and you have an amazing 4 days and you come back and you are just feeling so empowered. And that's wonderful. But after maybe a couple of weeks or for some people a couple of months, it sort of disappears, doesn't it? Because you go back into the real world.
Yeah.
And you're speaking to grumpy people. You sort of bring that mindset back to the normal level. So what do you do? What did you do then? And what do you do now in order to keep that mindset at that peak point?
That's really, really important because there are some miserable people out there. I mean, luckily, I didn't have a job at the time, so I wasn't surrounding myself with too many miserable people. It's myself and my business partner at the time, Ben. And we were just always positive. So we used to always read books on self-development. We were always reading. We were always watching videos on YouTube, listening to audios, and kind of as much as we could surrounding ourselves with successful people. Now, in a practical way, you can kind of do that to some extent. But with technology these days, you can kind of be constantly surrounding yourself with successful people, whether it's podcasts like this one, whether it's YouTube videos, or whether it's reading these successful people's books. You can really get inside their head.
I've got it. Okay. And in terms of property, how much property do you actually control now?
It's roughly £6 million worth of property. It's going up all the time. It's gone up by about £500,000, luckily, within the last year.
That's amazing. And how long is from absolutely no property to £6 million approximately of property? How long has that journey taken you?
That's taken us about, let's say, from 2000 and, well, I bought my first property in probably 2008, just before the crash. I bought my first property. That was 7 years ago. So it's been, it feels like it's been, some of the journey was quite slow, but we started with absolutely nothing. So that made things very, very difficult in those early years.
Yeah. Interesting, I find, when I speak to property investors, those early years, and it was the same for me, it does go slow. It takes time to get that success. And the problem for most people is they just don't stick at the same thing for long enough. They just give up because they're not getting those instant results that they've been promised, you know, on that weekend course.
Yeah, and it always just seems to be, especially when you're starting out, before you get some momentum up, it's kind of one step forward and two steps back so often. So there are loads and loads of setbacks. So it's just really important, especially, you know, when you're trying to build a multi-million pound property portfolio with no money, you'd be naive to kind of assume that it's going to be easy and there won't be any hiccups along the way.
So what did you do to get started? That very first deal that you got into, what was it? And just talk to me a little bit more about the structure of that deal.
So the first deal that I did, I was actually looking for property for a long time before I managed to get an offer accepted. So the problem for me was that I was looking for property through 2007, going into 2008. And at the time, just everyone wanted to be a property investor. Property prices were going crazy. Everyone just seemed to be paying over the odds for property. And even the property that needed work seemed to sell for only a fraction less than property that was in a good condition. So you might find a property that needed £15,000 worth of work and it was going to be worth 150 grand once the work had been complete. And it would sell for like 135 or even maybe 140,000. So by the time you've done the work to the property and spent the money, you actually would have ended up paying more for the property than what it might be worth. But everyone wanted to get on the property ladder. Property was going up really, really quickly, 10 or 15% per year. And everyone else was pretty much just completely banking on the fact that the market was rising, and that even if they paid a little bit more for the property than what perhaps they should, it would be worth it in the long run because it would just keep going up and up and up. Now, that just seemed crazy to me. It just seemed, although it was a booming market, it had been booming for years. I mean, I wouldn't have predicted the massive crash we had, but still, I didn't want to just rely on the property market going up. I wanted to make a profit even if the property market stood still.
Yeah.
So I really, really struggled to find my first deal, and I was everyone kind of thought I was a bit strange. I was kind of supposed to be in property, and I probably spent 6 to 9 months just looking for a property. I put in offer after offer after offer, viewing the properties, doing all of the due diligence, making sure I knew what it would be worth when it was done, working out exactly what it would cost to do all of the works. And I'd probably put 20 offers forward on properties, and I just failed to get a breakthrough. And then one day I found a property that was a one-bedroom flat, and by looking at it, I realised that there was a massive reception room. So it was about 5 metres by 5 metres. So I realised I could put the kitchen into the reception room and have a big open plan room. And then I'd be able to get from a one-bedroom flat into a two-bedroom flat. Now,
Yeah. You
add significant value. Whenever you can add a bedroom, you add significant value. So luckily, we went to sealed bids. I had an offer accepted. But less than a week later, this flat was it was owned by Summerfield at the time. And less than a week later, Co-op and Summerfield merged, and Summerfield pulled out of this deal because it looked like they were going to sell this whole property rather than just this flat. So looking from one viewpoint, I was back to square one. But from another viewpoint, I'd learned what I needed to do. I needed to add value. Now, either I needed to do that by adding a room or by doing something distinctly different to add value. It wasn't going to be enough to just simply buy a property, give it a lick of paint, you know, new kitchen, new bathroom, because that wasn't really enough to make a profit in that booming market.
Yeah.
So then what I did, I noticed that houses in a particular area, it's quite a cheap area of Bristol, kind of a working class area, but houses were worth about 150 or 160 grand. But one bedroom flats were really, really popular, and they would sell for maybe 110,000 each. So I thought, well, if I can buy one of these houses for about 150,000, spend about 30,000 doing the work, if each flat is worth 110,000, then I would have spent 180 and it would have been worth 220. So then I could remortgage at the time. I would have been able to get an 85% loan to value.
Oh, the good old days of 85%.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So I would have been able to refinance that property, pull all of my money back out, and go and take it and just do the same again and again and again. That was the plan anyway. Now, unfortunately, because I bought this property in kind of 2007 or 2008, I was halfway through the project and the property market crash, and I was absolutely gutted. I'd worked so hard on this place. I didn't really have much money, so I was working 40 hours a week in my job, and then on evenings and weekends I was spending another 40 hours a week doing up this this property and converting this house into two flats. And so I had to do the inevitable and get the surveyor around. I wasn't sure whether to keep the houses or whether I should sell them. I didn't know what to do because they'd lost a lot of value. And I was expecting to make about 40 grand off of this deal. Now, when the surveyor came round, we got the report later, and the bad news was that rather than making a 40 grand profit, if I had sold the properties then and there, I would have actually had to walk away. It would have been a loss of £7,000.
Yeah.
And bearing in mind, at the time, you know, I was in my 20s, all of my friends were just kind of enjoying life. They were all, you know, regularly going to the pub, going on holidays and that kind of thing. And I'd been working my arse off on this property, you know, not really going out that much, just working evenings and weekends. And at the end of the year, all of my mates were £7,000 better off than I was, because I was £7,000 down on this project.
Are you still friends with those same sort of group of people now?
Yeah, I think they're successful in their own right. That was just kind of a phase that we went through, and the kind of the year before I was doing that as well. So yeah, still friends with them. I have a lot of other property friends now that I have a lot more in common with, but still a good bunch of guys, and I'm still, you know, successful within their jobs as well. But certainly, at the time, I suppose that was quite a defining moment. Well, especially, I mean, it should have been a defining moment in a good sense, that I would have kind of come out of that shining after spending all of this hard graft, and I should have come out with like 40 grand to my name.
And so what happened with that property?
So that property, I never really wanted to sell the property. I just wanted to refinance it and move on to the next deal. So
yeah.
I kept that property. Unfortunately, at the time, because no one wanted to lend money, I had to get I got a mortgage, and the interest rate was 6.9%. So after all of this work, after everything, I was making £200 a month on these flats. So I was making £100 a month per flat in profit.
Yeah.
And that was with managing the properties myself. And I was making £100 profit before I had to pay for any maintenance or anything like that. So
there's no leeway there at all, is there?
There's not really. I mean, when you look at that, there's just not actually a profit. By the time, if you kind of consider the cost of management and maintenance, just no profit in that one. But luckily that one I signed up, and it was just a short, I can't remember if it was a 1 or a 2 year mortgage that I signed up for. And I don't think the banks had twigged that the interest rate was going to kind of drop off a cliff. So I went on to a standard variable rate that is linked to the base rate. And so my mortgage went down from £870. It went down to £290, and it still is. It's at £289 now. Now, luckily,
that's awesome.
Yeah, so luckily the flats now, between them, one of them's rented out for 535 and one's 545. So between them, they're rented out for £1,080, and we've got mortgages. The mortgage for both of them is just short of £290.
Yeah.
So we're making kind of £700 a month on those.
Today you're making that amount. And what happens when the interest rates go back up? Because we're in this golden age of low interest rates at the moment, and lots of people standard variable. My lowest standard variable mortgage cost each month, by the way, was 7 pence a month.
That's a good deal.
Yeah, and I had another one that was, I think it had a £90,000 mortgage, and it was 9 pence a month. And it was because the Cheltenham and Gloucester was the mortgage company, and that's part of Lloyds, or still is part of Lloyds, I think. And they were 0.5% below the Bank of England base rate. So I was hoping that the base rate would drop another quarter point, because then they would owe me money, and I had letters written. I was going to send them letters, and when they didn't pay me, I was going to charge them £25 for non-payment. You know, like they do to us.
Yeah, definitely.
Just thought it was really funny. So, what's the plan with this property, and you know, when interest rates go back up? Because they will go back up, obviously.
So firstly, the rents have gone up significantly from when I started this. So, the rents at the time were, when I first did it, I was getting about 950 in, and now I'm getting close to 1100 in. So straight away, you know, I'm getting a bit more rent. And I don't imagine that interest rates are going to go up as quickly as before, remembering that I was stung, you know, getting charged 6.9%. I mean, that's a very high rate anyway. So there's a lot of leeway in there for those, you know, rents will continue to rise. And we may end up in a position where the properties are only making me a couple of £100 a month each. But they've recovered in value now. They are actually worth what they were due to be worth at the time, of about £110,000 each.
Yeah. So your first property deal, really, you went into it, you did all the research, and you ended up with this deal. But really, you know, it sort of stacked up, but it sort of didn't really. It wasn't a great first deal, I guess. But actually, it washes its face, and it's fine. It's one that you're going to keep.
Yeah, I guess it was. It was just very difficult to predict, because I still don't feel I did anything massively wrong. And it was, you know, their interest rates at the time were usually kind of, people were paying kind of 4.5%. And then because of the market crash and no one wanted to lend, I was paying 50% more in mortgage costs than what I was expecting. So it was almost all of the factors were external. I mean, don't get me wrong, there were some challenges within the property. We had to put extra steels in and all of this kind of thing. I was doing pretty much all of this work on my own because I couldn't really afford people to do it. So just apart from having, you know, a mate to help every now and then. But it was not really a great deal. It didn't really make much money, especially compared to the kind of deals we're doing now. But it was just a great first stepping stone, I guess. It was just a really good learning curve. I learned so much about the building trade, and or certainly about, you know, buildings and conversions and things like that. So it's put me in really, really good stead.
Well, we're going to talk about some of the bigger stuff that you're doing in a moment. But if I may, I've got, five learnings that I got just from what you were talking about there. So let me just go through them, because I think they're really important for people listening. The first one is that, and it's something that you said, you didn't feel that you did anything wrong. And there's a line in Star Trek, you believe it or not, it's when Captain Picard looks at Data and he says, it's possible to do everything right and still lose.
Yeah.
And for those people that are doing everything right and not getting the results, sometimes it's not you, it's just the marketplace. So you've got to have that persistence to keep going. The other thing that stood out is that, and I've been saying this for years, is that you get paid twice in this world. The first one is experience. The second one is in money. Everybody wants the money and doesn't want to go through the experiential of actually going through it first. And that's one of the reasons why people can't get out of this rat race, is because they try it, they fail, or they don't get the desired result. We don't like the word fail. And then they give up instead of keep going. What was interesting was that you mentioned that you turned up and did 40 hours of work, you know, because you had your full-time job and so on. And it sort of made me chuckle, because I was like, what, you actually worked 40 hours, did you? Or did you just turn up 40 hours? I think that's really what you meant. So I went into Asda once, because I used to work at Dell. I went to Asda head office, we're doing some IT work for them. And I said to the IT guy there, I said, oh, how many people work here then? He went, about half of them. So it sort of sums it up, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, it definitely does.
The fourth learning on here was that actually hard work pays off. Because here you are, 7 years later, going through all this stuff, which is a painful process, both financially, mentally, from sort of a self-confidence point of view, it hurts as well. But just keep going, and that hard work, it does pay off. Too many people, I feel, are not prepared to put the work in. They're happy sitting on Facebook and saying, I'm going to run this marketing campaign, but they don't pick up the phone and speak to estate agents, for example.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And you've got to do, when you're in property, unless you're speaking to estate agents or you're speaking to sellers, you're not really doing what counts. You know, that's that's the only thing that's going to get you property. You know, I was speaking to estate agents or speaking to sellers, and so many people spend days, weeks, and even months just working out what they're going to put on their business cards, because that's kind of comfortable, and they can do that.
Or a logo.
The logo, and they can do that set at the computer, and it's nice and comfortable. But really, how much difference does that logo make, you know, when you're a small investor? I'd say very, very little.
It makes no difference. Look at Dell's logo. Look how rubbish that is. It just says Dell.
Yeah.
It's got no graphics on it, and that's it. And, you know, it's not the logo and that sort of thing that's important. It's the actual work or the result that you're going to get for the end user. So if you're buying houses for cash, what's the end result for that end user? Well, you're going to change their life one way or another. Hopefully it's in a nice way. The final learning I got from that was that you're going to look weird to everybody around you. For some people, Barry, you continue to look weird. I'm not suggesting for you for a second, or myself for that matter. But I quite like weird these days. I enjoy sort of being the weird one. I do find it a little bit weird, me fitting in these days, I must admit, as I come in from the plane and back to the UK. I find it, you know, walking around the supermarket, it's just weird for me. But then I recognise that in conversation, like just before we had this call, we're having some technical problems with the sound. And I was in Staples today buying a headset. And I said to the guy while I was buying the headset that I've got a problem with one of my houses because one of the tenants can't get Wi-Fi to the bedroom at the top. And he just stopped in his tracks and looked at me and he's like, sorry, did you say one of your houses? And it's like, you know, I tried to play it down then. And it's weird. It's really weird. I sort of played, this is what people do. We play it down in order to fit in.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. Why? And I'm sure you've heard this. Why are you trying to fit in when you were born to stand out?
Yeah, I love that quote.
And it's everyone listening to this can stand out because we're all special in some way. And we just haven't found it yet. So, Barry, who do you admire the most?
I really like the Donald Trump books. Now, whenever you see a Donald Trump interview on YouTube or anywhere like that, he's just a bit of a showman. And I think he comes across not in the best light at all. So he's always kind of, I don't know, he's always having to go at Obama and things like that. And I think he just likes the controversy.
I think he likes to be president, I think.
Yeah, I think he would. But I think when you get past that, and when I think he makes probably a lot of money out of being controversial, and he's always in the press and things like that. But when you get past that, and read a number of his books, and they were just great, because that's a guy that just really, really thinks big. So I used to love reading his books, because I'd be going through and I'd be having problems that were maybe a couple of £1,000 problems, or maybe 10 or 20 thousand pound problems. And then you're reading this guy's book, and it puts everything into perspective, because he's having like billion-dollar problems, you know. And
he was walking down the street and he saw a homeless guy, and he went, "Geez, that guy's worth $6 million more than me," because he went bankrupt by £6 million.
Yeah, it was. Well, he was in the red for nearly a billion. I think it's $900 million that he'd personally guaranteed.
So there's a saying, I don't know if you've heard the saying, but if you're in debt by £20,000, you've got a problem. If you're in debt by £20 million, the bank's got a problem.
Yeah, that's so true.
And the problems that we face are usually a problem of context. So, for example, if you're making £5,000 a month, but you're spending £6,000 a month, the problem isn't necessarily that you're spending £6,000, it's that you're only earning £5,000.
Yeah.
If you earn £500,000 a month, then that £6,000 isn't the problem. It's always a problem of context. So for someone like Donald Trump walking down the street and he loses $100 million on a deal, that's a lot of money for most people. But for someone like Donald, actually, it's probably not that much.
Yeah, definitely.
Who else other than Donald?
I really like Richard Branson's a really good guy. I just love typically British, fairly understated, fairly, you know, doesn't really do much presenting, you know, just gets interviewed, and just love his approach. And he talks about, you know, part of his role now, it's not really about the money, it's about, you know, how many people he can create work for, and he loves the fact that his company creates work. And I suppose I really resonate with that, you know, so I love it when, you know, if we've got a number of projects on the go, that means that we could have 20 builders that we're providing employment for, we've got our maintenance team that we've providing employment for, We've got our lettings team that we're providing employment for. And I think that's one of the best things about business. It's not just about the money. It's about, you know, to be able to give all of these people such great opportunities and to develop those staff as well. So I find that really, really rewarding.
I've got it. So also previously to this session, we were talking before about you've got 5 properties at the moment that are bringing in profit. And correct me if I'm wrong, obviously, of £145,000 a year.
Yeah, that's right. So our top 5 properties, make £145,000 a year between them.
That's phenomenal. I mean, that's just, you know, that is phenomenal. Well done, Barry, because that is, anyone listening to a call should be applauding you right now. From zero to hero, I love that, in 7 years. Who... when we make a film about you, who will get to play Barry Davis?
I haven't got a clue. I don't imagine.
Whenever I ask people that, they go, oh, it's Brad Pitt. It's always Brad Pitt.
Well, so people thought about this.
Oh, yeah. You know, I stay awake all day and think, who's going to play me when I die? And who's going to play that awesome character? Can't think of anyone, quite frankly. So, okay, I've got it. So talk to me about these 5 deals. What do they look like? So give me one of these deals and give me, say, how much profit it makes. I'm guessing it's a house of multiple occupation, which is a HMO. Do you own it? What did you buy it for? Have you remortgaged it? Have you put a commercial mortgage at the back end? Just talk to me through these numbers, if you can, on one of those.
Yeah, sure. So let's talk about one that we've got a lease option on. So we secure...
And just clarify what a lease option is. The last podcast we did was about lease options, but obviously people don't listen in the same order. Just run through what a lease option is and why they're advantageous, in case I missed it out on the last one.
Yeah, sure.
And then talk to me about the lease option deal.
Okay, so the lease option, a lease option is basically where you have a lease on the property. So you give a landlord a set amount every month, and then you have the benefit of that property, so you can rent it out. And the idea is that you rent it out for a lot more than what you pay in the lease fee. Now that's the lease part of the equation. So the option is that you have the exclusive option to purchase that property at any point during the lease period. So we signed up a lease option on a property in BS8 in Bristol. So that's Clifton, it's the most exclusive part of Bristol. And we found a property that was in need of a lot of work. And because it was in the middle of the recession, or maybe it was coming out of the recession, but a couple of years ago now, we found a property and it needed a load of work, and it was on the market for £285,000. So I got to speak to the owner of the property, went in with the estate agent. This is over, the property's overlooking the waterfront. So we went and met him at the property, sat there having a cup of tea and chatting about how we might be able to help him with his property. So we had a quick chat, and it turns out he didn't have a mortgage on the property whatsoever, so there was no desperate need to sell the property. So I asked him why it was that he was selling, and he said, well, you know, the tenants are not really the best quality, and it's because the property's got tired over the years. I don't really know what I want to do with what I'm going to be able to do with the property. I'm getting on now, so I don't want to spend kind of an absolute fortune doing the property up. So I just don't really know what to do. So just kind of being forced to sell the property. So I said, you know, do you mind me asking what you're going to do with the £285,000 that you make when you sell the property? And he said, well, I don't really know. I'll probably just put it in the bank. And I said, well, what kind of interest rate do you think the bank might give you? And he said, well, bugger all, you know. I think it was a bit less polite even than bugger all.
Yeah.
But, yeah, kind of effectively he knew that he was going to get virtually no interest in the bank because interest rates are so low. So I said, well, if you're lucky, the bank will give you about 2% interest, so in a year. So if you've got £285,000 that you put in the bank, then that means that the bank will give you £5,700 in interest if you're lucky. Rather than doing that, why don't you lease this property to me? I'll give you £1,000 a month for the property, and then I'll buy it in the future for the full asking price. So by doing this, you'll get £12,000 per annum rather than the 5,700 that you might be able to achieve in the bank. So you get twice as much by leasing the property to me than if you sold the property and went and put the money in the bank. And so the guy was a businessman, so he negotiated, and I ended up paying him, I think it was, £1,200 a month we pay on that property.
Okay.
So, and it turns out I had a chat to him, and he said, well, actually, the best interest rate that I'm able to get in the bank at the moment is 1.6%. So if this guy had sold the property and put the money in the bank, he would have ended up with about 4,000 something per annum. And because we're giving him 1,200 a month, that's 14,400 per year. So we're giving him an extra £10,000 per year through doing this deal. So this guy's £10,000 a year better off. So over the 4 years that we've got the deal, this guy is going to make an extra 40,000 compared to he had just put the money in the bank.
Brilliant. What I love about that, Barry, is the total win-win situation that you created out of thin air.
Yeah, so here the guy's doing really, really well out of it, and we haven't really been through the numbers, but we're paying £1,200 a month for the property. I think the bills are, I haven't got the numbers in front of me, but the bills are about 500 and something. Got management and maintenance. Management cost us about 130 in wages because we do that in-house. The maintenance, we put aside about £100 a month. So all in all, let's say our costs are about £1,900 a month. Now, we actually lease that property, we actually rent that property out, and the rent that we achieve is £3,850. It's just gone up because we just re-rented one of the rooms. So we're getting £3,850 in, and we're paying out about £1,900 a month in total costs.
So on that one, you're making about £1,950 effectively.
Yeah, so £1,950. So probably about £23,000 a year on that property.
Brilliant. How many bedrooms is that?
That's got 8 bedrooms, and 5 of them are en suites.
And when you took on that lease option, did it have 8 bedrooms then, or did you create more bedrooms?
No, it only had 5 bedrooms, and the guy couldn't really believe what we did with the place. But he's a businessman, and he's always been into property as well. So he's not really been jealous. He's just been really, really interested. And he said, well, you know, I never could have done what you've done. So fair play, yeah. You know, if you're making good money out of it. So what did we do with this property? So we extended the property under permitted development, so you can extend the property to the rear without going through the full planning permission. So
okay. How far can you extend that?
That's three meters, or you can go further. This is a terrace property. You can go further if it's a detached property.
The reason I ask that, Barry, is that for those people listening who are thinking, what's my first step? It's like, well, what's the house that you're in looking like? And can you move that back and add a couple of bedrooms and then rent out the property on a per-bedroom basis, and then you move into your next home, effectively?
Yeah.
That's pretty much how I did it.
Yeah, that's really good. So, yeah, I mean, that's a really good way to do it. So, I mean, those are some of the key ways that we add value. So we'll do an extension, and we're doing extensions like that for between 15,000 and 17,000. That creates an extra room, and if we can get that into an ensuite room, then that gives us an extra probably £6,000 or £7,000 per year.
Yeah.
So it costs us about 15,000 to 17,000, and we get an extra 6,000 a year. So within 3 years, we get all of that money back out. But also, that 17,000 that we spend, that increases the value of the property by about 40,000 or 50,000.
Yeah.
So that was one of the ways that we created an extra room. Another way was that it was a big old Victorian house, and it had a bathroom that was 3 meters by 4 meters. Now, in shared houses, you don't really want people spending all day in a bathroom because it annoys the rest of the tenants.
Yeah.
So straight away, we got rid of that large bathroom, and we put a shower room elsewhere in the house. We actually managed to put it on the landing because the landing was so big. So that was space from nothing to create another shower room, and that bathroom became an ensuite room that's rented out for about £500 and something pounds a month.
And in terms of planning to get from a 5-bed to an 8-bed, do you need any planning in there for that?
Yeah, so you have to go through planning to go above 6 bedrooms. So if you go above 6 bedrooms, you need to get the planning permission. But, you know, planners don't always say, you know, planning got a very bad reputation, and probably for good reasons, because they can be a pain in the ass. But, you know, they don't always refuse. We've just had, you know, planning on, you know, another big project, which is a 19-bedroom all-en-suite block of flats, and we've got planning approved for that as well. So it's not the end of the world. You just need to make sure that if you don't get planning, that the deal's not going to die. So either you need to buy subject to planning if you really need it. Otherwise, you need to make sure that actually, will this work as a 6-bed?
Yeah, checking the numbers are going to work if you don't get the idea that you want it to. So sometimes, you know, I've got clients, they're buying 3-bed semi-detached houses and then we're converting them into 2 1-bed flats.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, they get the planning. Usually the neighbours complain.
Yeah.
And the neighbours say, well, it's a family area. But actually, the planning guys want a multiple type of accommodation in an area, not just families. It's got to be like multi-use, you know, the either single lets or just HMOs even.
Yeah.
A local environment has to have all of that. So we like it when, you know, when the neighbours sort of complain about, because we know it'll go through eventually. It's just usually it's the things, reasons why we don't go through is like highways agencies, because of the increase in cars, for example.
Yeah, definitely.
So you've got to watch that, make sure there's enough space for cars. Did you run into any of those sort of problems with that?
We didn't know. Bristol is the European, well, it's always been very green, but 2015, it's the European Green City of 2015.
Awesome. Did you get like a medal?
I don't think we got that, but what it did mean for us, I wasn't just saying it, you know, but what it did mean for us was that...
I'm so impressed. My holiday next year is definitely in Bristol.
Get down here.
It sounds awesome.
But the benefit is that in the city centre, they're not so bothered about parking, so you don't need to have masses of parking. So we've got a 19-bedroom block of flats in the centre, and we haven't got parking, but we don't need to provide parking. Bristol City Council just loves cycle storage. So if you tell them we're going to convert this into an 8-bedroom house, but we're going to put a load of cycle storage in for all of the tenants, and it's right on a major bus route, and people can get about without cars, then, you know, that can really, really help getting planning.
I love Bristol. It's just beautiful, beautiful, just down by the docks. And I've been around to a couple of your properties and seen the work that you've done anyway. And it's just a great area to invest in. Could you have done what you've done if you lived in, say, London?
I think...
Or would you have been more successful if you lived in London? Because everyone's got excuses, haven't they? Oh, well, it's all right for Barry because he lives in Bristol and Bristol rocks. But I live in Bognor and I can't do that in Bognor. Or whatever, you know?
Yeah, so I think... I mean, we're not going to pretend that deals aren't harder to get in London, but deals in London would be so much more valuable. So even if they are harder, you've just got to be persistent, you know? So, I mean, let's face it, if in the recession you manage to get half as many deals because you're in London compared to people elsewhere, you would have done a lot better than the people that are investing elsewhere. So since the recession, you know, property prices in a lot of areas are up about 50%. So there were kind of pluses and minuses for each area. Now, I mean, Bristol's quite an affluent city. It's kind of the second highest GDP outside of London. So it's a really, really affluent city. So it's not that it's easy here. It's, you know, we have a strong tenant demand, but, you know, property prices are fairly expensive. But we can kind of benefit from that as well. I mean, some of the properties we signed lease options up on a number of years ago, we've since bought those properties. And at the time that we purchased them, one we had about £140,000 of equity in, and another one we had about £70,000 of equity at the point of purchase.
Yep.
So between the two properties that we've bought so far that we had on lease options, we've got £210,000 worth of equity.
So what does a typical day look like for you?
So typical day, at the moment we have about 3 or 4 sites running at any one time. time. So at the moment, we are developing a 7-bed. We're developing a 10-bed. We're developing a 19-bedroom block of flats. And just this week, I've exchanged on a property that's it's going to be a cafe. So my mum's always wanted to run and own a cafe, so I've just bought one of those. So it's a new project for us. So typical day might be a tour of the properties to see how things are going, to help the builders with any decisions that they need to be made and answer any questions and to kind of ask them some questions as well. So that tour might take a few hours. We've got about, including the stuff that we're developing at the moment, that it'll be about 140 rooms. So we've got a team that manage those, so we meet with the team, see how things are going, if they need any help. Generally, they tend to do things pretty much on their own, but just need a bit of direction here and there. We can add a little bit of advice, but we tend to try and get them, empower them to make decisions, and they just kind of come to us if it's something they haven't come across before, if they're not really sure. But, you know, most decisions, if it's less than 100 quid, then they're going to make the decisions themselves.
So how many hours a week would you say that you work? 40, 60, 80, 20? What is it?
It's probably different every time. I say... It just depends, because I'm writing a book at the moment, so I may spend a number of hours writing the book, so it depends if you'd include that. But probably on an average week, I'd probably still work about 40 hours, because I just kind of really enjoy what I do. So,
okay.
And it may go up and down. So if I'm writing a book at the time as well, I'll do that in some evenings, and it could be that I might spend 10 hours a week writing. Or if sometimes I go and speak at networking meetings, and those can be all over the country, tend not to go too far, too far for the networking meetings. But so I may go. So this week I'm going to speak in London. So I'm going to have meetings with a number of investors I've got in London. I've got some people coming down to Bristol, and other potential investors. I've got a mentoring client. I've been doing one-on-one mentoring, but I'm doing my final one-on-one mentoring client this week. So I'm going up to see them in, I can't remember exactly where. It's kind of Cambridge, Peterborough way.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
And so this is your final one-on-one?
This is my final one-on-one.
And what happens after that? So if somebody wants mentoring from you?
Yes. How
do we get that?
I'm setting up a group that's starting in September. So it's a small group of action takers. So I really want people that have already, they're already active in property. Maybe, you know, they've bought a property or two. So I want to make sure that people are definitely going to take action. And the best kind of proof is that the fact that they've perhaps taken action already and they've already bought a house. So I'm looking for people that are already moving, but want to up their game. So either people that maybe they've bought a couple of buy-to-lets, but they realise that there's a lot more money in HMOs, which is what I specialise in. Or there's people maybe that are doing HMOs that are kind of 5 and 6 beds and are maybe making £1,000 a month. I want people that kind of want to step up to the next level, because if you can do an 8-bedroom HMO and you're getting about 500 or 550 a room like we are for en suites, then your profit's going to go from £1,000 a month right up to £2,000 a month. So, you know, just by having two more rooms, you double your profit. And that's what I'm kind of really looking to help people do. And obviously, we've got the big 19-bedroom block of flats that we're doing, which is a commercial to residential conversion. So that's a bigger deal again. And that property alone, the profits on that's going to be 58 grand a year, just in rental profit, not including the capital growth.
I love it. Absolutely love it. You've got a book out right now. What's that called?
So my first book is Escape the Rat Race with Property Lease Options. So if anyone wants a copy of that, I'm actually giving away digital copies of that. So if you do want a copy of that, you just need to text 66777. So that's the number you need to text. It's 66777. You need to text. Make sure you include the word HMO. Your name and your email address, and I'll get you a free copy of that sent out by email.
I love it. And I've read that book, and what I like about that book is you, and I mean this in a nice way, but you write as you speak.
Yeah, I didn't have a clue how to write a book, so I just started kind of chatting on paper.
Yeah, but it's just really authentic, and that's what I loved about that book. So, okay, so talk to me. How does someone get into, other than buying mentoring, and obviously reading your book's really important and so on, but how does someone get into a bigger deal? Because the bigger, you know, you talk 18, 19 bedroom properties, and it just rolls off your tongue like you're falling off a log. For most people, they would be absolutely petrified at looking even at a deal, let alone putting an offer in, because they would go, well, it's £1 million. I haven't got £1 million. I don't know where to get £1 million from. How do you get into doing bigger deals?
I think you should kind of start, not necessarily small, but you shouldn't try to do one of these deals as your first deal, because the first hurdle you may come across is that the banks won't want to lend to you if you haven't got experience. So it seems a bit negative to say, well, don't go for it as your first deal. But I mean, that's the truth, really. So your first deal, maybe you're going to buy, I don't know if I would recommend someone to buy a single let as their first deal, just because they don't always make that much money unless you get a great mortgage. So I'd say maybe start with a small property. So you might have, you know, 5 sharers in a property. You could just do that on 2 floors, so you wouldn't need a license, a HMO license, which you need when you've got 5 or more people on 3 or more floors. Yep. So you could just start with a 5 bed, and that would make you, you know, it might make you £800 to £1,000 a month, and that's a great place to start.
See, I love that, because how many of those do people listening, how many of those do people need to never work again? Like 3?
Yeah, definitely.
4 maybe?
Yeah, when I was in my job, I used to take home about £1,600 a month. You know, and that's probably now the average amount we get from a property, because we're focusing on larger properties.
Yeah.
So yeah, you just really don't need very many of those. But that kind of deal now, I think, oh, is it worth the hassle? You know, because we don't really do 5 beds anymore. We kind of, the minimum we'd really go for is a kind of a 7 or an 8 bed.
I've got it. Okay. And when are you going to stop? So so your book was called Escape the Rat Race. And effectively, you've now escaped the rat race. But when are you going to actually give up doing this? How old are you now, Barry?
I'm 34 now.
34? You're getting on a bit now, aren't you, sir?
Yeah, that's it. Better retire.
And recently married as well, so congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you.
So when is, you know, what, when you turn 40, are you, what's the plan? Are you going to be in Monaco? What, you know, what's the sort of long-term goal here? Or do you just love what you're doing all day long?
Yeah, I'm really, really enjoy what I'm doing. I think the way that things will evolve will be that I'll just do even more of the stuff that I really like, and I'll have more and more people working under me to kind of do all of the other jobs. So I don't really want to be doing anything apart from kind of finding properties or making the decisions and overseeing everything. I kind of see that as my role now, as kind of leading the company. Eventually, we'll probably be bring in property sources. We've already got the management team. We've got teams of builders that work with us. And sometimes I still get involved in the day-to-day stuff that I probably shouldn't. So I think it's a case of that we'll end up building a bigger team. And we're kind of working very hard in the business at the moment, but we're going to create something that we can then step away from. But I don't imagine stepping away, but it's just nice not to have to work, you know, not to have to turn up.
So I think it's the choice, isn't it?
The choice is really good, and we go through phases. I mean, not this year we haven't really had loads of holidays, but last year we were on holiday for kind of six weeks of the year. And I suppose it's just a choice. And I guess, you know, I'm hoping that a family's not too long away for me. So then it's a case of, you know, do I want paternity leave, and how long do I want? Because, you know, I don't really have to go to work. I mean, when the last time we were on holiday for 2 weeks, our lettings manager emailed us 4 times during that time, and that's kind of because we were pestering her. We were emailing her saying, "Is everything definitely okay?"
Yeah, because it's a bit quiet.
It's a bit quiet. You know, you're still alive.
Love it. Maybe the email's gone down. Something's not going on.
Yeah, something's not right. But she just, you know, and off those 4 emails, mostly it was like, yeah, everything's fine. This has happened and this has happened, but I'm handling everything. And probably only about 2 of those emails, she actually asked us any questions.
Right.
So we, you know, potentially we could do that a lot more. I think where I'm struggling at the moment, perhaps, or not struggling, but I don't feel that I could grow the business whilst I'm away. So that would be the next step, is have a business that's actually growing whilst you're not there. So
yeah.
If I wasn't around, I can't imagine, I don't know how we would kind of buy more properties and develop those properties. And kind of, I don't have people in place to do that at the moment. I mean, the business would still grow. Our rents go up considerably every year. You know, even if we don't do anything, our rents will go up between £1,000 and £2,000 a year across the portfolio, just through you know, just annual raises. And obviously the portfolio, even if it goes up by 5%, that's a big chunk of money, you know.
It is. Okay, so a couple of final questions I just want to run through, sort of a quick five round. What are your top three tips for getting started, would you say?
Just take action. I mean, someone said there's that old kind of saying that knowledge is power, and I just think that's... Are we allowed to swear on this?
light swear words are fine, I think.
Yeah.
But,
am I allowed to say bullshit?
No.
Okay. So I don't think that knowledge is power at all. Like, yes, you definitely need to know what you're doing, but you've got to take action, you know. You can know absolutely everything. And if you want to get into property, you can read all of the books. But until you take action, until you start going and viewing properties and going and making offers and getting on the phone and or talking to vendors or whichever method you're using, until you're doing that, you're just not going to get any property. You're not going to get any property through reading property books. And although it's, you know, it is really, really important to educate yourself, but you really, you know, you've got to be taking action. That's the key.
I've got it. So that's number one. Number two and number three.
Number two.
Have you covered them all?
Number two, I'd say you've got to be getting, you want to be getting educated, but you just got to make sure you choose the right people, and you want to be working with someone that's kind of out there doing it or has achieved what you want to do. So, you know, there are a lot of educators out there that actually don't actually do much property, but they got a cracking education business that makes them a fortune. So
yeah.
You kind of want to be working with, you know, out there working with someone that's got a portfolio that's kind of doing what you want to do or has achieved what you want to achieve. So just get the right advice from the right person. So many forums on the internet. I try and avoid those like the plague, because you get there's a lot of free advice on there, and some of it's kind of worth what you pay for it, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, and there's a lot of negativity as well. As soon as you stick your head up above the parapet, that's it, someone will try and shoot it. And it's very easy to get bogged down into conversations, we'll call them, for disagreements, aren't they?
Yeah.
Who's right and who's wrong.
And I just tend to avoid them as well. Someone gave me a heads up the other day that my most recent book and my most recent talk that I'm giving is about retiring on one deal, obviously, because we've got this one property that makes us 58,000.
Yeah.
And one of the people on one of the main forums was saying, oh, I've never met her, but she was saying, oh, that's bloody rich. Why doesn't he retire? If he can retire in one deal, what's he doing these talks, you know?
Yeah.
Just very, very negative. And, you know, most of us are working because we love it. Well, not most of us. I suppose a select few are working because we love it, you know?
I specifically don't work as much as possible. I, from a personal point of view, I'm like 10, 20 hours a week maximum for me. But obviously I live in Spain, and all I need to do is manage the stuff that I've already got, because I've gone through that now and sort of come out the other side, and I've worked through what my ideal day would look like, for example, and that's what I wanted to live. And it could be that in a year or two I might get bored of that. We've just had a baby, she's 6 months old, and maybe when she starts school in a couple of years, because Spanish school, that's what will happen. Maybe at that point I might want to get back on the horse and start buying again. But each person's reality is their own reality. And so, you know, if you love doing what you do, well, it's not work, is it?
No, it certainly doesn't feel like work. I mean, when I used to have a job, everyone used to just look forward to Fridays, and everyone used to be miserable as hell on a Monday, And you know, you wouldn't really get a smile out of anyone until Friday, and I just hated that. And now,
or payday.
Yeah,
payday comes the last Friday of every month, and by Monday it's gone.
Yeah,
because it's gone on the mortgage, it's gone on the expensive car that no one can afford, but we have to look good. We've spent it on going out for meals because we're fed up and hate the lives, and so we'll go out. When I owned my lettings agency, it was really interesting because on a Friday night, we would get a peak of people looking at properties, and Sunday night as well. And my interpretation of that was people got to the end of the week, hated work, thought, oh, maybe we should look at flats because we wanted to change their life in some way. So looking at somewhere to live was a way of doing that. And Sunday night, they'd be like, oh, I've got to go to work. I hate my life. Wonder what else I can do. So we'd look at flats again. And it was just amazing how that we could track the peaks and troughs. I mean, maybe that's not the reason, but it seemed pretty apt at the time. What's the third tip that you can give for someone getting started? So you've got taking a massive amount of action, get educated by the right people. What would be the third one?
Just be persistent. You're going to get a lot of knockbacks, especially, you know, when you're trying to do creative property solutions, you know, whether you're trying to buy and you haven't got any money, or you're trying to do lease options, you know, you're trying to invest and get the most out of every pound, rather than just kind of buying the same way that everyone else does, you're going to get a lot of rejection. But every deal you get is worth so much money. So we've secured these lease option deals, we've secured rent-to-rent deals, you know, deals that make us £20,000 a year that we haven't had to put in a mortgage. We haven't had to get a mortgage, we haven't had to put in a deposit. And so these deals are so valuable, but that's why they're so hard to get, you know. So you're always going to get knockbacks. So you just got to be persistent. You've got to keep going. Definitely worth it in the end.
Interestingly, those three tips for getting started, which are taking action, getting educated, and being persistent. If you want to go to the gym and become Mr. Universe, well, you've got to take a lot of action, you've got to become educated how to do it, and you've got to be persistent. If you want to get into a relationship, ladies and gents, if you're single out there, you've got to take a lot of action. You've got to be educated about maybe opening lines, for example, and you've got to be persistent and take the rejections. Anything that you want to do is actually summed up in those three tips right there. What's the one pitfall that you would recommend that people really watch out for?
When I started, I wanted to own every bit of every property as much as possible. And I feel that really slowed me down. So either we'd kind of find deals that we didn't really have to put much money into because, we didn't want to go and kind of have to get joint venture partners and share the deals. Or we may end up, you know, we find a deal that does need money to go in, but we'd end up borrowing all of the money rather than doing any joint ventures. And I just feel it really, really slowed me down. So when you're trying to do stuff with no money, it can be really, really difficult, you know, and every problem is a problem, you know. So if you're trying to grow a business on an absolute shoestring, and that's what we did, we just literally just didn't have any money for the first couple of years, really. And it could just be very, very slow, and every problem is a problem, is a big problem. So let's say we had one of our houses, and let's say the fridge broke in one of our houses, and it was, let's say it was the 20th of the month. Well, we didn't have any more rent coming in until the 1st of the month when everyone paid their rent. And we didn't know, because we didn't have 50 quid, we didn't know how we were going to find a fridge to go in this house. Now, that's a very, very hard way to work. And that kind of really can affect your mindset. And it can be, you know, everything is just slower, you know, whereas let's say you kept a buffer, so you kept a few quid of your own, but you end up doing joint ventures or things like that, then you'd have a lot more money coming in. These little blips will actually, you know, you're not running everything so tight to the bone, and you can afford to kind of deal with the problems. And then actually you can actually focus on finding property rather than dealing with money issues. And it actually, you know, you'd, even if you were sharing the properties on a 50-50 basis with someone else, you'd be buying more than twice as many properties, because you wouldn't be spending all of your time chasing your tail, trying to make ends meet and things like that. So I think that's really important.
Final question. Two books that you would recommend, not including yours and not Rich Dad Poor Dad.
Can I include my second book?
Yes, you can include your second book.
So So my second book that I'm hoping to finish by the end of the weekend, and then it'll take me a little while to get it published and get it out there. But that's called Retire in One Deal. So anyone that's really looking to step their game up, and rather than making a few hundred pounds from a small standard buy-to-let property, and anyone that wants to kind of maybe move into HMOs and certainly into larger deals, the book's absolutely great for that, and I really, really enjoyed reading it and sharing my stories. So that should be a really great book.
Other than that, and the second one?
What was I like? I really liked The Success Principles. That's quite an old favourite of mine.
Is that Jack Canfield?
Jack Canfield. And each chapter is just a different success principle. So one of the chapters is kind of borrowed from someone else's book, but it's Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. But you just have a chapter on that, so it'll just be a few pages, and it's kind of really condensed.
What I love, Barry, is the fact that you've gone old school.
Yeah, that's really old Jack. Yeah, back to Jack. But that's kind of an old favourite, and I didn't want to pick something that kind of everyone else would pick, but I really like that one because it's just so condensed, you know. So it's so, you know, if you can read kind of 5 or 10 pages, and that'll really kind of sum something up, because everyone's busy these days. So I think it's really, really important to read, and if you can't, to do audio books. But if you can get a book like that in 10 pages, you can kind of read something that's going to be really valuable, because 10 pages is the most that most people get to read these days in any one day.
Perfect. That's everything, Barry. You've answered all the questions that I had for us tonight. I've really enjoyed the podcast, and I'd like to say thank you for coming on. How can someone contact you if they want to find out more about you, or they want to speak to you, or they want to ask a question, or maybe they want to be a mentoring client?
Okay, so the best way to get hold of me, so if you want to get hold of that first book, then just remind you that you just need to text 66777, so that's the number you need to text.
Okay.
You need to include the word HMO, your name, and your email address, and I'll send you, I'll email you a copy of that book out. My website is embarrassingly broken at the moment, so I'm just going to give you another email address, which always works, which is barry@smartpropertyinvestment.co.uk. So you can email me on that if you want. That's my old...
Interestingly on that, it's interesting because your website's down at the moment, and I was the one who says, oh, Barry, you know your website's down. What I love is that you're not exactly the most technically literate person I've ever met. But none of that actually matters, because it's just a silly excuse that people use as a reason for not getting stuff. Well, I've not got my website done. I can't do that. And it's like, oh, it doesn't matter. Off we go. Let's go find another deal. Whey!
Yeah, I mean, the core of what I do is doing property and property deals. And the mentoring, I kind of absolutely love it, but it's kind of an aside to kind of what I do as a core, and I just teach people to do what I do. But the most important thing is not having the best website, although it annoys me a little bit that it's down, and I need to kind of create a couple of websites at the moment, one for the lettings business, one for that. But really the core and where the money is going and finding another property that's going to make me £2,000 a month or £5,000 a month.
Doing it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Barry, for coming on. I really appreciate, you know, you spent a lot of time with us tonight. And if anybody wants to get in touch with Barry, then just drop him a quick email or just text HMO to that number that he gave out earlier.
Yeah.
And Barry, thank you once again, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Nice one. Thanks a lot, Dan.
Take care.
The Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.